It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab. I am Adrian Hernandez. I'm here with Jackie Kay, Ezra Parter, Evan Liu. And we are talking everything Colorado Avalanche. We've got a lot to talk about today, as goes the season, heavily revolving around injuries, but some positive news, sort of, on the injury front. And then also, you know, some not so positive news on the injury front. But if you like what you're watching and listening to, please don't hesitate to like and subscribe. Head on over to Twitter. Follow us there, where you can follow us at Mile High Hockey and the actual podcast at MHH_lab. And if you are smart and kind enough to be on YouTube right now watching, be sure to subscribe and share with your fellow Avalanche fans. So since I've got everyone's attention and we're ready to roll, let's drop the puck and do this thing. The first thing I really want to talk about, and I was pretty reliant upon you all today for the script, because man, was my day crazy. But the first thing I wanted to talk about was, as Ezra so hilariously put it, the sick road trip domination. And let's start with you then, Ezra. What's your like most major takeaway? What was the most impressive win for you on this streak and road trip?
Oh man, it's got to be the Toronto win. That was amazing. That was to play that quality of defense against that quality of an offensive team. It's fantastic. And then to keep themselves up for the Ottawa game and keep it going. Obviously there was a little bit of a defensive lapse toward the end, letting them climb back in, but that's what happens on the second half of a back-to-back. And then, yeah, they played great defense the whole stretch and let their back end carry them. And that's what you got to see in the playoffs. And that's what we want to see right now. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, and I was hoping that we'd have Jacob on today, because he was kind of a little bit ahead of that in terms of how he saw that game potentially being a showman game for the Avalanche in terms of defense and kind of showing what they have in that regard. Jackie, was that your takeaway from the Toronto victory as well?
Looking back on it, definitely. At the time, I kind of felt like that game was boring, and it's not because I need to see 5 goals or something for it to be exciting, but it was just it definitely was good defense, but it was also like at the expense of any offense. So it was a little sleepy at times, I think, but obviously they did what they needed to do to get the job done. It's just, I don't know if they can limit their own offense that much over, let's say, a series, but we don't have to worry about that at this point. But definitely like that was the good team that they needed to beat, and they've had some not so pretty games against Toronto. So it was definitely encouraging. I'd say my favorite was the Montreal win, 'cause I was there.
Very nice.
And it was nice to see them get out and dominate that game.
What's it like to see a game in that arena?
It was cool. It was a different perspective. I was on the first level, or the first row of the third level, so I usually don't get that view at Ball Arena, so it was a little different from that perspective, but the atmosphere was almost like a football game. It's kind of what it reminded me of. It's just kind of like an older building and kind of the fanfare and stuff like that. I wasn't sure if that's what I would have expected, but it was cool. It's fun. Like, even though Montreal's not that good, like, their fans really don't care. Like, they still were like into it. And
I always find it amazing how you can hear the reactions from the fans when there's a game in Montreal on like small plays, like when the puck barely gets out of the zone, and or a guy barely keeps the puck in the zone. It sounds like somebody scored a goal in Arizona. So I just feel like it's a totally different atmosphere. It's interesting that you liken it to like an American football game. Evan, tell me, was there another game in the streak that you thought was more impressive than maybe the Habs or the defeat of the Maple Leafs?
You know, I think I'll just kind of retweet what everyone's already said. I know that's such a Gen Z thing to say, but nice. Here we are.
you didn't shorten it to RT, so we're good.
No, I was thinking the exact same thing that you said earlier, Adrian. I wish Jacob was here. Congratulations to him, by the way. He's closing a house, so that's awesome.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, he called it perfectly. He said that it was going to be a close game all game long. You know, tight defensively, mm-hmm. You know, that's how you're going to win that game. And that's exactly how they won the game. Yep. And quite frankly, that's how they won a good chunk of these games. And I was busy this week, so I didn't, you know, get to watch a ton of their games, mm-hmm. But I know that I think I'll give a special shout out to Jonas Johansson with that last ditch save. I didn't get to watch it live, so I saw it maybe like
I would consider that a flurry of saves. Although the most obviously there was one in particular that saved the game.
Yeah, that lunging like to the right, like oh my gosh! I mean, I saw that, and this was probably like 10:30 at night, and I'm at a train station, and I just go oh, like just audibly out loud. I was like, what? So shout out to him and what was an almost costly blown game. So.
That was against the Senators, right? Am I mm-hmm. tripping?
That game
to me, although it ended in a way that maybe wasn't ideal, I do think that was still impressive, especially given the back-to-back part of the whole scenario. I think it's easier to have a team come back on you when it feels like they're never in it until like the last 2 minutes of the third period, because just the way that game kind of shook out, even when they were kind of fighting back, it didn't really feel that way. It kind of was just like, well, the Avs will get one, which is kind of what happened. So I was very impressed with how the Avs were able to basically hold on. And you would think a team on the second of a back-to-back, that would be the one thing that they might not be able to do. So I felt like it showed a lot of, I don't know, moxie for a team like the Avalanche to rebound almost from giving up such a big comeback. Cause had they not scored so much, they would have been losing, obviously. But it didn't feel like a blown game to me.
Yeah. I think it's important for them to win those kind of games because, like you said, that was definitely like a trap game. Maybe they're a little mm-hmm. bit more tired, but those games against the Senators can be weird, especially in Ottawa. Like they're a good team at home. And they'd be a playoff team if it was just based on their home record. And so, and they also had that where they pushed back, like they were physical, like they were trying to start stuff. And I think the Avs need to fight through that as well. So I think it was a good test for them in some ways that you wouldn't expect, I guess, because they're probably not going to make the playoffs and it should be, you know, quote unquote, easy win for the Avs. But I think they fought through a lot to get the win in that one.
Yeah, see, that's exactly what I'm thinking, and I was actually pretty entertained by Lars Eller's first goal as an Avalanche. I don't know if you'll ever see a goal like that in the NHL again, you know, maybe in the next couple of years. He seems like he's kind of starting to contribute in ways that we didn't really see in his first couple of weeks as an Avalanche. What are you thinking of his time now, Ezra, that we've seen him play a little more?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think he's rounding into form. He's finding his fit, and finding some chemistry with O'Connor and Cogliano, which, you know, like we talked about when he was acquired. I'm about to sneeze. Sorry if I look crazy. It's coming, but I'm going to keep talking. As we talked about when he first got here, we were like, yeah, he's got to fit in as a third line center or potentially a fourth line center with those guys to grind out games and play some good defense. And he's shutting down the opposing top line. You know, mm-hmm. he's not just shutting down middle of the lineup guys. He's shutting down Austin Matthews. He's shutting down Tim Stützle. He's playing great, and it's not just him. It's really that group coming together that made it work so well.
That's a good point, and credit to you for your acting chops for holding that sneeze in so well.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's impressive. That's like one of the hardest things to do on Earth.
I'm waiting for him to be unmuted, and then.
Yeah, exactly.
And there goes the recording.
It's completely gone. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. But Jackie, do you agree with Ezra there? Do you think it's more of like a rounding out of that entire line, or do you think you've also seen like a step up from Eller?
I'm still I wouldn't say on the fence, but I think hesitant a little with what he's able. You know, I don't know what to expect, really. Like, it's tough when you have a veteran that's been somewhere else for years, and it does take a lot of time to acclimate. And the Avs play a different way, and so if you're not used to that, like, it can be difficult and all that. I'm waiting for him to, like, create offense. And I know, like, the two goals he scored were fun and unexpected, and you need that. Like, we've seen that from, say, Nieto, who I think is really not generating much offense either, but he is at the right place at the right time, and he's able to put a couple pucks in the net. And so I think we could probably expect that from Eller too, but I don't know how he's going to work offensively, because I think he's also taking some of those second line minutes with Lehkonen out. Like, I know it's Malgin on paper, and Malgin is playing more, but he's still only playing like 11 minutes.
Yeah.
So the other minutes are going somewhere else, and I think it's Eller. And so they're using him a lot. So, I mean, that's good. It's just, for as much as they're using him, I'd like to see just like a little bit more playmaking, like anything.
Gotcha.
But the I will story say, isn't over.
Like, yeah, I will say
we'll
that.
We'll see 2 months from now.
Yeah. And sometimes getting a goal in like those really weird ways is exactly what a guy needs to kind of.
So he's not just thinking about
Yeah, it. Exactly. So I feel like you're onto something there. We're like, there's a playmaking level that we still haven't seen, but the other stuff that we were told, like, I think he's as advertised now. And then I think what you're looking for, and I think what all Av fans are looking for, is for him to be elevated a little bit, given that he's on a good team, a really good team now. So he should get better, just like everybody else that comes in place for the Avs in recent history. They usually get better and have career years within 3 years of being here. So, Evan, are you kind of in agreement there? Do you think he's still missing a little bit of contribution, or are you ready to bring him into the fold?
No, I'm definitely kind of on the same page as Jackie, because I'm also kind of in agreement. I wish there was a little bit more point production at this point, but at this point it is what it is. I mean, that was that was such a Lars Eller way to get his first Avs goal, like with just how that all kind of shook out. But I have to say, props on his second goal, you know, falling down out of balance, like sliding it to Nichushkin and then collecting the rebound, like that was an impressive goal. I would like to see that on Steve's hat picks on Sportsnet next tomorrow, I guess, at the time of recording this. But no, I've definitely come around more to like his defensive play and the things that he does, you know, not on offense. And, you know, doing the dirty things, the dirty work, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, if he can tack on a couple more goals and some more assists, you know, in this last couple of weeks of the season, that'd be awesome. So I'm really hoping for that. And I'm also interested, especially to see how he'll fit in once Helm is back in. Since, you know, he was on the road trip. Helm was on the road trip. They tried to sound like as if they were going to try and play him on Saturday against his old
team. Red Wings,
but,
right?
Yeah. But didn't happen. And then I know Bednar said this morning that he's sick. So I don't know if that's the only thing stopping him or if he's not fully recovered yet from his injury. So we'll see. But, you know, if Helm is able to come back, I'm really interested to see where Helm goes and then in turn where Newhook goes. And I know we'll get more into Newhook later, but it'll be interesting to then see how that bottom six really goes along with both Helm and Eller.
Yeah, well, it feels like we haven't had a typical lineup like all season based on how it's shaken out. And so we're going to see a little bit of a different lineup tonight probably than we've seen in a while, with a few more injuries. And then, you know, like you said, a couple guys coming back potentially, we could see some changes. Jackie, do you have any updates? I was totally off. I did not know that Makar was day-to-day. I can start with that. Do you have anything else for us in terms of the injury front heading into the game against Chicago tonight?
Sure, yeah, and I listened to Bednar's presser, so I've heard it from the authority.
Person to ask, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, Makar is not expected to play tonight. It's just what's considered a truly day-to-day, like, minor thing. He was at morning skate, but he left partway through it.
Okay.
It looked like he got a little dinged up in Detroit. Like, he didn't play the last 10 minutes of that game. they did have the game in hand pretty much at that point too, but it's not really typical for the Avs to like completely sit somebody in that situation. And so it did kind of seem like maybe something's up. Lower body, I don't have any reason to not believe them at this point. Like, if he's going to take maybe a few games off, this week wouldn't be terrible for it. So we'll just see. All right, let's see everybody else. There's like eight people to get to.
While you're looking, like
Evan said, Helm was not there, but they said he was sick. But there's no word on, like, you know, can he play this week or not? I guess we'll just see when he gets back on the ice what they say about him. With him, it's always been so tough to peg down, like, exactly, you know, where he's at, because it's just at his age and just how this year's gone. I really think it probably is truly a day-to-day thing where it's just like, how are you feeling?
Right. Can you give it a go? Yeah.
Yeah. Manson was not out there. He's not skated yet, but Bednar said he's making progress. So
okay.
I don't know. He's probably weeks away. Franzos got on the ice while they were gone one day, so he skated on his own a little bit. But it sounds like he has not been on the ice since. So
interesting.
You say maybe that didn't go well. Yeah. Or
usually they come out and stay out if it went fine.
Yeah. So he needs more time. They did say he's back in the gym. So it's not like he's being shut down or anything.
Right.
But yeah, if he tried the ice and it's a no, he's probably weeks away too. So, and then the two that were out there were EJ, and he was in a full contact sweater for the morning skate. It just seems like, and people that have watched him have said he skated very hard. It seems like he's doing everything. He's just basically waiting for medical clearance. I think he feels pretty good. They just want to make sure that, like, that bone isn't going to be susceptible to breakage or.
Gotcha.
You know. So I think probably maybe like a week or two away, just because, you know, it's a bone and they don't want to just throw him out there, but he seems good to go. So I think once he gets the green light, he's going to play. And then Landy, of course,
sorry.
What everyone wants to know.
Scared me. Oh my God.
He's awake.
He did actually partake in the morning skate, which is interesting because it's the first time he's really been with the full team. But usually when guys get to that point, they are getting pretty close. It wasn't so much that. It's just, I'm sure he's probably itching to get out there with the team. And it's a morning skate, so it's not like a
pretty laid back
practice or whatever. So he did do a couple of the warm-up drills with the team and then left. So kind of the same thing. You know, Evan from Colorado Hockey Now said that he believes that Landy will not be ready for the beginning of the playoffs, or the team is not expecting him to be ready. So it truly is like an inch by inch thing with Landy. So we'll just see. We'll see how the next month unfolds. I think that's everybody. And oh, McDermott's going to play tonight. So he's healthy.
Yeah, he's back.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Evan, the other Evan, said that about Landy, because I mean, just his presence at morning skate is huge in and of itself. Sure. I mean, yeah, it's a red non-contact jersey. And I think we're all expecting him to not play for at least the next 2 weeks. Right. So progress is progress. Right. And this is in this entire endeavor that Landeskog has gone through now for the last year, this is the most progress that we've seen him make. And that is great to see. I mean, to see him out there. I mean, his teammates are probably ecstatic. There you go. That's a good one. I should know the words, but I don't. Ecstatic that their captain is out there and that their captain is, you know, his presence alone will help the team. Like just having him there at morning skate is probably going to be helpful for this team for the last few weeks. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is the first sight that we see him, you know, take morning skate. And, you know, hopefully as it kind of goes inch by inch, you know, then he can participate in more of those drills and participate, you know, longer in morning skate and just keep getting closer and closer to a return.
I mean, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but I have a feeling Landeskog is not going to be coming back or getting on the ice, and kind of whether or not it's a positive or a negative, like being a slight distraction to his teammates, unless he plans on returning soon. And then here's the thing I'm gonna blow, but it's Jantelagen is the Swedish philosophy of being very team oriented and kind of deflecting attention from yourself to your team. And like, he really takes that, if you watch all of his interviews and pretty much anytime he communicates with media members, it's always about his teammates. And that thinking, I think, goes into every decision he makes, because he's really, really about that part of his life and his culture. So I don't feel like, and I don't want to make this sound like I don't believe some of the news breaks, but I don't consider them real news breaks. I think there's a lot of conjecture going on with like the little things that we see happening instead of just kind of like letting it unfold. Because like when you say it sounds like he thinks maybe, that's like what it feels like. It's like it sounds like he thinks maybe he won't play, and that's not news, right? That's not Bednar saying he's not set to play for the playoffs. So I'm ready for like the non pretend news breaks on Landeskog. Like, I'm so ready for it to be like, guys playing tonight, no more talking about it. So with that, let's move on a little bit. We did a live poll today, just to kind of get a vibe on who the Avalanche might meet in that first round matchup with or without Landeskog, apparently. Do you think, and the question posed these three teams, and I just did this because the Avs are third in the Central right now. They would play the Wild if it started today. And then if they were to somehow win the Central, they'd likely play the second wild card. And who knows who that'll be. So I have Seattle Kraken and Winnipeg Jets with the Minnesota Wild as options. I'll start with you, Ezra. What's your answer to the poll? Who would you rather them see in the first round, the Wild, Kraken, or Jets? And if not them, who?
Who would I rather they see?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Minnesota doesn't scare me at all. The Jets have a Hellebuyck, which is obviously, you know, a big deal. But then the Kraken, they've been good. They've been good, yeah. And they've beaten the Avs a couple of times. So I think I'll have to go with the Wild. You know, it'll be a fun series too, which is exciting to get to play a rival. But also, you know, I'm not worried about those guys.
Yeah, first round isn't really the question for me. At least I hope it's not the question in terms of like who will be the toughest matchup. That's kind of why I phrased it, who do you want to see in the first round? Because I feel like getting out of there in 8 days is important, as we see. Evan, what do you think and what's your answer to this poll?
Yeah, so my head, because I have a head and heart combo here. My head wants Winnipeg, just because Winnipeg has fallen off a cliff for the last month and a half.
Right.
And yeah, they have Connor Hellebuyck, but he doesn't have much of a team ahead of him. So if the Avs take care of business and they go on to win the Central Division and Winnipeg, you know, ends up falling in their lap, I would love that matchup. But I have been telling everybody and their mother that I would love an Avs and Kraken series. That would be so much fun. I mean, you have so much talent on both teams. I mean, if Burakovsky's healthy, you know, playing his old team in the playoffs, same with Grubauer. I mean, both of them are definitely going to want to get revenge on the Avs, and the Avs are still going to want to continue to try and steamroll guys. So my heart wants Avs Seattle, because that would be such a fun series. Of course, they'd have to win the Central to make that happen.
Right.
And I feel like, honestly, because I'm looking at the standings right now, I think at this point, because they're 6 points behind Vegas, who's top of the West with 92, and then, you know, LA's in second with 90. So those two are neck and neck for the winning the West. Dallas is on 89. The Avs are on 86. So they're only 3 points behind Dallas. And I know I mentioned it in my piece yesterday when I was trying to preview, you know, kind of the what scenarios could play out, is that, you know, we were not talking about too long ago, okay, can they make a wild card spot or finish third in the Central?
Yeah.
And now we're here. They're 3 points away from top of the Central, and they still have two games in hand on everybody. So it's still really promising that they can win the Central. Now, with that being said, they are still only 5 points ahead of Winnipeg. And Winnipeg goes on a run and they win five straight like the Avs have. And then if, you know, roles reverse and the Avs drop a whole bunch like the Jets have recently, then it could all flip on its head again. So, you know, you just have to look at both sides here. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm not trying to be like, oh no, the Avs are going to miss the playoffs. Da, da, da. No, I mean, you know, you still just have to watch your back just a little bit.
But oh yeah.
I'm more looking up than anything else.
So. Yeah. I think the strength of schedule has me optimistic. Cause even if the Avs kind of have an off night or two, they might still sneak out one or two points as we kind of saw with the Senators, you know? So, Jackie, I'm going to take it over to you. Is there a team maybe like not on this question or this list that you might think of, like maybe Calgary Flames, who are kind of teetering in the wild card position?
Well, I'd say Nashville, right?
Yeah.
If you truly want a waste of 8 days, then you want to repeat last year and Nashville's worse than this year.
Is Nashville's 5 points out of a wild card spot right now?
Yeah, I think they're still pretty close to Calgary.
They're 1 point
three games
Calgary.
In hand. Three games in hand on Winnipeg, who's at 81 within the second in the wild card. So,
I guess ideally, if you want the easiest, that's probably my answer. Do I think that's the most likely? Probably not.
Yeah.
I agree with you all. If they win the Central, it would be fun to get Seattle and have something different because I don't necessarily think it would be easy, but it'd be different just because Seattle hasn't even existed that long.
It'd be fun.
It's just, you know, these guys are still trying to find their way together as a team, and they've done a lot better job this year. But the Avs should be able to win a series there. But I just think so. I definitely am hoping for the division win, but I don't know. It just feels like this year they're going to be in that middle of that Central. Mm-hmm. I think they can get second, which. Still, does that mean play Minnesota? I just feel like it's kind of set at this point. And, I guess it's possible like Minnesota could knock Dallas down. I really don't want to play them in the first round. I just feel like it's going to be something like that rather than like a crazy kind of matchup where it'd be like Seattle Avs with that kind of like really different. I just feel like we're kind of destined to have that more typical, you know, what you would say, like. Division rivalry type of playoff series rather than like, hey, we've never played this team or that team. So that's kind of what I expect. And then to the answer to the second question, who do I want to play in the second round? Whoever beats Dallas, I want to play that team.
That's very well put. That's very well put.
I like it. I mean, the thing is with Minnesota, like they're a tough, gritty team just like Dallas is, and I feel like that would be a challenge. And so I don't really want that, but I feel like we might get it. And
we've played Minnesota well. Sure, we have another game against them.
So we do. Yep. Next week. So
that makes me feel better about it. But it will get into like that rivalry where it's not going to be easy either way, just because you're so familiar with the team and it probably would be a closer series than anyone would like.
Results are interesting, like in the sense that there's been 72 votes, 33% to the Wild, 33% to the Kraken, 32% to the Jets.
Oh, wow.
So it sounds like their fans are pretty indifferent when you really think about it, which kind of lends to what we're talking about, which is like, it doesn't really matter. Bring them on. Not scared of really any of these guys that we might face in the first round, especially if like Kaprizov's return doesn't quite go as they've planned.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I don't think the Wild are quite as dangerous without Kirill on the
Avs does a pretty good job against him. Like he's not the one that really beats them up. So, but it's true. Like he's certainly their most dynamic player.
They said the first comment was that I got from somebody was they need to play the Wild because they need to exercise some demons. And I've talked about that a little bit. How it might be fun to do the same kind of a similar thing that they did last year. Yeah, the we go start with Minnesota, then it'd have to go to Vegas Dallas.
No, Dallas and then
Dallas,
Vegas.
Yeah. And
then Vegas.
Yeah. I was gonna say get out those pitchforks for 2014.
And then San Jose plays in somehow in the play in. No, well we get that with Pete DeBoer though, right? For Vegas.
Yep.
So it's still there too. So this might be the Revenge Tour Volume 2, and I think this version is a little bit more difficult because I feel like these teams are, like we've led to, like a little bit of a matchup thing for the Avs. And that's kind of what we were worried about last year heading into the playoffs. And it felt like they kind of got some pretty favorable matchups in terms of that. You know, playing Edmonton, they were kind of a physical team, but there was just ice everywhere to be had in that series. I think the closest that they got was in the Blues series to, like, to stylistically what we'd see from maybe Dallas or Vegas. So, and that was their best test, other than the final, obviously. And even the final, I would say, is actually probably the closest to that play style, because that's kind of Tampa's thing. So they slayed the Eastern Dragon in terms of that. Let's see, what else we got to talk about? I got to pull up our script here. I feel like... Here,
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, I had the great chance to speak with Bennett Durando from Denver Post this weekend.
Nice.
And, you know, he and I were talking Avs things and all that. And he actually brought up a great point that if things go certain ways, Avs can meet Oilers in the first round.
Wow.
I mean, Edmonton's only on 86 with the Avs. But
Edmonton's Calgary played... slips in there and then they slip out.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Or Seattle moves back up to third in the Pacific because they've played one less game. And they're on 83 points.
Interesting.
So if the Avs win the Central and then Edmonton slips down to the first wild card and Seattle's up to third, then you could get a Western Conference final rematch in the first round. And obviously the same storyline of Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon would be up against one another, but it'd be in the first round this time. And whoever ends up on the losing side would be, you know, pretty heartbreaking for either guy and their team. So,
yeah.
I think the thing that would interest me, though, because you mentioned the open ice part, right, would be how much open ice we would get this time. Because, you still have, like, Cody Ceci and Darnell Nurse.
But they went. Yeah.
Yeah, still back there. You don't have Mike Smith, who's going to be leaking goals. But
they,
you know,
they
you
went still and got Campbell. A defender, too, didn't they, at the deadline?
Is Ekholm.
Yeah, Ekholm. So Ekholm would definitely help with that, for sure. But then again, you still have Jack Campbell, who is not – been, you know, his same self all year. Mm-hmm. Is he better than Mike Smith of last year?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe.
Probably, a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean,
They're starting Stuart Skinner right now too. So yeah, you know, he's a little bit better than both of those guys.
And Murray's just hiding somewhere. Who knows where that guy is? So.
He's probably injured as always.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. If we get Avs Oilers, I mean, that's definitely not a matchup I would want, quite frankly. Especially if we have a healthy Leon Draisaitl, because you have to remember too, in the Western Conference final, who's practically playing on one leg.
Yeah.
So
no, that's the scariest matchup in the West, really. The
absolutely.
You can say what you want about Vegas or LA, but really, it's the Oilers that scare me in the Pacific, because they do have elite talent, and that's what it comes down to sometimes in the playoffs, if they can get the support they need.
Yeah, well,
I think they're so overrated. Like, I just...
Elaborate.
They obviously have the two superstars, but if you look at the game when the Avs had that major comeback against Edmonton, they won, 6-5? McDavid had 1 point.
Yeah,
like they have the defense to shut him down because they can skate with him and they can keep up with him. Mm-hmm. So not to say like they won't get points, but everyone's stars are going to get points.
And I think it's common for, I mean, even heading into the series last season, it's easy for media to be like, well, you can only keep Connor McDavid out for so long.
Yeah, I'm just so tired of their storyline.
Yeah, and I
spent 2 weeks talking. I just don't want to talk about it. Like,
well, it's I listen to NHL radio a lot, and bless all those guys who do their work on that program, but they definitely have some East Coast bias. and what's hilarious to me is they talk about the Avalanche like they're kind of like a lost cause in some respects, like. They're like, oh, the Avs have a good roster when they're healthy, which is true. But it's like, if you're following the direction of Avalanche health, it's actually on the right trend. And I think, like I mentioned this in the script, but it feels like they no longer consider the Avs the threat in the West. It seems like they're talking more about Vegas and they're talking more about Edmonton. How do you explain that, maybe, Ezra? And do you agree with that?
Well, I think probably they're looking at the standings and right. they're looking at the statistics and they're not watching the games. So yeah. what they're seeing is the Pacific teams are racking up more points and therefore they're better, which is stupid and short-sighted because they're not to the fact that they're playing an easier conference.
I was going
to
say the dumpster fire of the Pacific. I mean,
yeah. Whew. I mean, yeah, if we got 8 games against the Sharks, I think we'd have pretty good stats, good you know? Point. So that's basically what it comes down to. And no, I think it's wrong. I think the Avalanche are still the team to beat in the West, and good hockey reporters, good writers, people at The Athletic or whoever know that and are saying that. So yeah. I don't know what's going on at the NHL Network, but I don't, but that's pretty poor national reporting if that's what's happening.
Well, I essentially mean, I don't think it's too much like that they're saying that they're done for, but there's definitely a tune to like they're well Edmonton, they went and got a defender and who knows, they went to the Western Final last year and do they have what it takes to win it? And then when they talk about the Avs, it's like they're the former champions, but mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it's
there
like
are a lot of buts with this team. Yeah. So that's not unreasonable. Like they do need to get healthy, but for you're sure. also right. They're trending in the right direction.
Exactly.
And even not healthy, they're racking up wins. So
yeah. And it's funny. Cause in one side of the face, it's like, well, the Avs are playing the easiest remaining schedule. And so they've won 6 in a row. And then on the other side of their face, they're like, well, the Avs, there's no way they're going to go deep because they don't have the depth and because they're mm-hmm. injured. And it's like the reason you win games while you're injured is due to depth, no matter who you're playing. So the Avs clearly have depth. What they don't have is security in their lineup, which I understand that being a concern. But like we've spoke to, there's a trend of that kind of changing. I mean, obviously, there'll be a tinge of it in everything we talk about in the postseason. But that happens for every squad, much mm-hmm. less the repeat champions. You know what I mean? So or the defending champions, excuse me.
Yeah.
Hopefully repeat champions.
You make a great point about the security part, because I mean that the security and the consistency of the team has never been the same this year. Just mm-hmm. it's never there. It's never been there. So, you know, when you get to the playoffs here in a month, you know, you hope to have that kind of consistency and whatnot. And even then you're still gonna have injuries pop up. We saw it last year. Kadri goes out and then Compford, you know, moves up and he does really well in a higher elevated role, you know, in those last two rounds. So, you know, you can only hope that that's the case. But I mean, when you look at, you know, focusing on other teams, I mean, it's just the Stars.
You mentioned that like, oh, Edmonton has the two superstars, but I think if you ask a lot of people, they consider Rantanen a superstar statistically, but not otherwise. Mm-hmm. Which I find hilarious.
He should be thought of. It's funny that, and I know we've talked about this before, like, is Miko still underrated? And
I'd say so.
Yeah, you hear so much about like McDavid and Draisaitl, but you don't ever hear it mentioned the same way like MacKinnon and Rantanen. And I know
exactly
because Makar gets so much attention, but that should be something different because he's a defenseman and he's doing it a completely different way. And why isn't MacKinnon and Rantanen thought of as like that two-headed monster, which they never are talked about like that?
And I was gonna say, if you look at, you know, kind of the partnerships, I guess, and like the duos of like, oh, you've got Leon Draisaitl and Nathan, or not Leon Draisaitl, no, they don't play on the same team, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid,
Team Canada,
against Nathan MacKinnon and Nico Rantanen. Yeah, that doesn't work either. McDavid, Draisaitl versus MacKinnon, Rantanen, okay, great. And then defensively, Makar, Taves, awesome. Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci.
Where? Yeah.
That's a very uneven matchup. You have to look at it as a whole. But, you know, I don't know if I would want Edmonton in the first round because I feel like that'd just be a better, you know, conference final matchup again. Round two, do it again. So we'll see. But shout out to Bennett for taking the time to speak with me this weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That was nice of him to just talk Avs stuff, including the Oilers, and give us something to talk about too.
Yeah, I just for me to answer the question, I'd say the West as a whole is not strong this year, so I don't think anybody should have, you know, definitive statements like, oh, the Avs can't do it, because a lot of these teams are unproven too. Like, that's also why I don't believe in Edmonton. Like, they're so what? They won a couple rounds finally.
So did Ottawa 5 years ago.
Right. You know what I mean? They've had so many years where they failed to meet expectations. And what, McDavid's going to have a 180 points or whatever it is, and they still are, they might still be wild card.
Yep.
You know, so I personally think Vegas has probably been the, other than the Avs, have been the most consistent team over the last several years, but they've lost a lot of players. So they're almost doing it with like half a new team. And then Dallas has also sort of reinvented themselves. So I think there's just a lot of question marks with every team. And so the Avs are just, have just as much right to be in that mix. They obviously have proven it. They've been a good team for the last 5 years. They, if they still have their superstars healthy, I think you have to like them the best. Even though I have talked about their depth problems all year, and it could become a problem, but it would be silly to not put them as either like the number one team to beat in the West or like a 1A, 1B situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you look at the stats too, like MacKinnon is 88 points, Rantanen with 83. Like, these dudes are right on top of each other all the time. I just don't get it. I don't get the... I'm here for it because it works, because Mikko apparently loves not to be not talked about because he keeps scoring.
Yeah. I really want him to get 50, though.
I was headed.
That was going to be my question. Like, how important is... Like, obviously, their goal is to win another cup, as it should be. But, like, how important are those milestones? Like, Mikko to get to 50 and MacKinnon to get to 100. Like, just how much does it matter to you? How much should it matter?
I think it matters. I mean, to me, it doesn't matter, but I think to them it does. And so I'm excited. Like, I think whether or not they say it out loud, like MacKinnon in particular, the 100-point thing, because I don't think he's done that yet, right?
No.
That's one of the few things he hasn't done. And obviously, we know Rantanen's not gotten 50. He's only 4 away. So, like, that's bound to happen. My question is, how many more? Yeah, I know that. But, like, realistically speaking, I mean, especially with the strength of schedule coming up, like, he might be in the mid-50s, closer to mid-50s when the season's said and done. Yeah, which would be crazy. Cool.
That'd be crazy. I mean, look at what he did in December when he was quite literally the only guy in the lineup that could produce offense. I mean, people who aren't in Colorado or follow the Avs closely aren't going to look at that. They're going to look at, oh, they had Jean-Luc Foudy and Oscar Olofsson in the lineup and not having to deal with so many guys out that they're going to overlook the fact that Rantanen quite literally carried the team on his back for that, you know, long stretch there.
Exactly. So. And then what's crazy is you still get the people who are like, well, what is he without MacKinnon? Just look.
Look at what he did. I know, but I mean, yeah, the milestones are nice for sure, but I mean, you'd just like to see him do this, just pretend it's a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they would all take that. We would all take that.
Yeah. Oh, but absolutely.
I also think it's like with Makar and the Norris, and there was a lot of like, oh, he's gonna win so many in his career. Like, it's cool, but it's not that important. But it's just talked about so much that like the. This is a guy that's accomplished that. And I just think like in the moment, it doesn't matter as much maybe, but I think when you start looking back on seasons, you know, you say this guy has a 50 goal season under his belt or a 100-point season under his belt. I think like those things do matter, especially when you start talking about like Hall of Fame and other things like that. Where...
Especially with guys like Mick Kern out in the world who think guys like, Rod Brind'Amour don't belong in the Hall of Fame because he doesn't have X amount of 50 goal seasons, like just what you're talking about. And it's like, how does that make any sense? It's the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of really good stats.
Right. And so you just never know when you're going to get close enough again. Like with Makar, like he's still the same player, but you have Erik Karlsson who's putting up ridiculous points, so he's gonna get it. Like, you never know.
Yeah.
As long as McDavid's in the league, is MacKinnon ever gonna win a Hart trophy? Like, it's just things like that where you just never know when it's your time. When you're able to have a statistical season or be able to win a trophy like that. So it does kind of matter to me, but I mean, if Mikko hits 50 or not, that doesn't mean they're like not going to win the cup, or they are.
Right.
But I just think, especially for a guy that we want to see recognized as one of the elite players in the league, like
50 is a big deal.
I absolutely hope he hits 50.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ezra.
That really is where the McDavid Draisaitl as like the dominant duo and MacKinnon and Rantanen as kind of, you know, just other guys who are very good kind of conversation comes from is those counting stats. It is.
Yep.
McDavid and Draisaitl put up 100 point seasons multiple times. And so that's where they get that reputation. And that's why those kind of things matter. Yeah. They want to be considered like, you know, the top of the league.
Play the Ducks 8 times and the Sharks 8 times.
Or have a power play where you score 50 power play points.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, also you can say maybe score more times against the Coyotes. So
fair enough. That's like McDavid can have the heart. I think MacKinnon will take Lord Stanley instead. if that's the way it has to be for the rest of his career. Yeah, I think he would take it. I find it interesting that we're talking about like the big heads and the big names in the Avalanche right now, when in reality, a lot of the success we've seen from Colorado has been due to some contributions from guys we didn't really expect. Namely like a guy named Dennis Malgin. We've seen a lot from JT Compher that we really didn't expect just in terms of amplifying his production. Let's get to the Dennis Malgin and kind of Alex Newhook / apparently Lars Eller conversation. And you look in minutes wise, there's kind of, Jackie, you said there's kind of been some dialogue around Newhook in that some are disappointed and some aren't. I'll start with you in that case. Are you disappointed in Alex Newhook's performance this season and kind of within this moment of opportunity, or are you seeing what you kind of expected?
I feel like he's more meeting expectations. I think, and it has been a very divisive topic lately. I've seen it a lot in our comment section. I've had a conversation multiple times on other platforms. So it really does seem to be like a really hot button issue. And I think once he got moved down to that fourth line, it really magnifies it, because it's like, has he really been demoted? Is that just the way that the lineup is working right now? But to answer your question, like, but I also never had the expectation that he was going to be like the 2C, that he was going to replace Kadri. And I really didn't think that was going to happen. I think he has solidified himself as a middle six player. And so that's kind of what I expected. I guess you'd like to see him build on his production from his rookie year, and he still has time for that. But he's been a strong producer at 5-on-5, which I think is important.
Especially this year.
Right, yeah. Especially with the struggles the team has had at 5-on-5. And so I don't think his production has been disappointing. He's missing a lot of like those cheap power play points, and he's not on power play one. I just don't think they're going to give him that role right now. So I think for me, he's meeting expectations. I guess you always hope for more, always hope that he's going to take like a big step. But they're definitely going to need players. They're going to need middle six players. So if that's all he is, like, that is still incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
And it might take him a couple years. If it takes him a couple years to have that 50, 60 point season, that's okay. Like, it's taken, you know, the others a lot of time. Like,
took MacKinnon, really.
And Newhook's rookie year, he scored 33 points. Until this year, that was Compher's career high. So,
right. Yeah.
It's like,
good point.
So it's, so the production is there, is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
And if he can only build from there, like I said, I think he can get into the, maybe that 50, 60 point conversation. But like, he is providing at this point. And being on that fourth line, I think it's a little unfair to him, because he's been a better player than that. I just think that's the way things are shaking out right now. You know, he'll get his minutes, he'll get his opportunities, because his name is on the Stanley Cup, you know, like he has proven something.
Yeah. Well, it's like, and I mentioned MacKinnon, and obviously MacKinnon made a stronger impact initially on the score sheet with 63 points in his rookie year. But after that, he had 38, then he had 52 and 53. And it really wasn't until his fifth year in the league when we saw him scratching at that 100 point per season kind of guy. And that's actually who I think Nathan McKinnon is. So to your point, it really it even took a guy like McKinnon 5 years to really become who he is in the NHL now. Evan, can you expand on what Jackie has to say about Alex?
Yeah, I was going to say you make a great point about McKinnon, and obviously the team was in a much different state when McKinnon started, and you know you can talk about 2016-17 all over again if you want, but you know he worked and he got it, and now look at where he is, right? Mm-hmm. This Newhook has kind of been he's been planted in this really great situation, and he you know in his second year he gets a Stanley Cup. And so then people place that expectation on him. Oh, you know, he needs to do better and, you know, keep producing, especially after Kadri left. Because, I mean, Bednar said it himself. He said Newhook's going to have 2C, you know, for as long as he can and needs it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that didn't last very long. And, of course, there were outside parameters that caused that change just with injuries. Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's unfair, and maybe that's what fans are kind of reflecting on is the fact that, you know, they were told, oh, Newhook is our guy. Newhook is our 2C moving forward. Newhook is our guy who's going to break out and have a career year and do XYZ things, right? Instead, it was Comfort. Comfort is the one that's done that this year. And, you know, I think fans are going to take that at this point. I mean, and you also just have to remember, Newhook is still so young. He's 20. He's my age, for crying out loud. Like, imagine me playing in the NHL. I couldn't do that. Newhook doing that and doing what he's already doing is incredible in and of itself.
Yeah.
So he needs patience, I think, especially just because he is in a contract year. Maybe that's why it's also such a big debate, along with, you know, Comfer and Rodriguez and all these guys, that – you know, they might look elsewhere for options. I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to give Newhook at least 2 years,
mm-hmm.
at least, if not more. I would like to see maybe 3 or 4 and then see where that kind of goes from there. But just give him more time.
Yeah, Joe's got 300 games. And just so you know, Newhook's only played 145, which is wild. People forget he only played 6 games in 2020 and 2021. And Ezra, I'll take this to you. Do you think it is one of those like perfect storm such type of situations where Kadri leaves, it's a contract year, we just won the cup, and Coach Bednar says he's the 2C kind of heading into the season? Is that the reason why we expect more from a guy like Newhook?
Yeah, I think those are all factors, and I think there's a big factor that we haven't talked about yet, which is Cale Makar came into the league and destroyed and dominated, and that set the expectation for what he can do. And Alex Newhook is not a generational talent. He's fantastic. He's a good prospect who could be a very good player, but he's not Cale Makar, and that's what some fans are maybe expecting out of all rookies mm-hmm. now. That's just not fair. I think he's been great at as far as like coming along and developing his game and becoming the kind of player who he needs to be to stick in the middle six of an NHL lineup. He's done a great job. He hasn't gone above and beyond and run away with a second line center job. That's disappointing to an extent, but also, yeah, that makes sense. He's a kid.
Yeah. I think it's a good point. Like, that might have been a challenge, not an expectation for Ben.
Yeah, agreed.
That might have been like, what I see in Newhook is that he is the 2C for us in the future. Mm-hmm. And I think he was like challenging Newhook, not saying he has to be this. It was like, let's see if you can do that, because that's what we want for you. Which, speaking back to the McKinnon situation, in terms of it having some similarities, now the Avs can get Alex Newhook back on a pretty affordable basis. And I think he'll be more inclined to stay with the team that's just won the Stanley Cup. So I think even though he might have some – he's a restricted free agent, right? So he can't just jump ship anyway. So mm-hmm. I think what's going to happen here is you're going to get a really good 2C at a very affordable rate in the next 4 or 5 years, or for the next 4 or 5 years, maybe shorter term than that. But my question at the end was, how does he fit into the future of Colorado? Evan, you have something.
Yeah, maybe. I went back. I wanted to find exactly what Bednar said about Newhook back in September, October. Mm-hmm. So this is quote from a tweet that, you know, Jared Bednar mentioned that Evan Rodriguez and Alex Newhook as options for 2C. He also mentioned that Mikko Rantanen is always an option. This was back then. And he said, quote, Newhook will get a good hard look at 2C. And then he followed that up with, he wants to give Alex Newhook a real shot at 2C, not just a few games. He said he'll have multiple months, perhaps even until the trade deadline, to see what he can do.
Yep.
So that time has... Sorry, go ahead, Jackie.
I was going to say one big issue with that is at the time they didn't think Landeskog was going to miss the whole season. Yeah. I think it could have unfolded a lot differently if he was able to play with a guy like Landeskog, who
interesting,
would be a great support and that defensive help for him, because it's like now Newhook's doing it without really any quote unquote you could say help in that department. Like he played with Rodriguez, who isn't amazing defensively himself, and like now he's with Galchenyuk, and like what it's just been like he hasn't been really put in a position that's really supposed to like support him. It's like Newhook's almost had to kind of like kickstart some other guys. So I think that maybe at the time when Bednar said that, September, October, it wasn't known that there'd be like no Landy, and then Nuke would be beat up for half the year, and it just like unraveled from there.
And that's a great point too, because that also kind of could explain, you know, his role in the team today. When you look at that third line of Cogliano, O'Connor, and then, you know, now Eller, that has been the line, you know, specifically Cogliano and LOC, that have been together for a good majority of the year, because they're the ones that have been healthy all year. They're the ones that have actually been able to play and get chemistry all year. Now, of course, they had Compher, you know, at the beginning of the year to start things off. But, you know, that they're still that line in and of itself has better chemistry that Newhook probably can't fill, I feel like. Yeah. And I think that's why he's on the fourth line. I think that's why the way he is. And that's why I mentioned earlier, I'm really interested to see how it all fits together when Helm returns, because then where do you put Newhook? Do you put him, you know, on the wing on the fourth line? Do you move him? Do you dare move him up to the second line, you know, on a wing or something like that, you know? So it'll be really interesting to see how it all unfolds. And I feel like I'm trying to think of like another player controversy we had, I guess Compher and Kadri last year. I feel like it's this all over again. Like, or no,
kind of Jost in a way.
Jost. That too, yeah. So that's a better one. That's a better one.
In a way,
I was going to say that.
Ezra made a great point about Makar, and I think like thank God the Avs don't have a lot of high draft picks in the next few years, because they would be subject to such high expectations. And then with that being said, you bring up Jost, and that may come into play with how we evaluated Jost in the latter stages of his time with Colorado, because it's like he was a 10th overall pick. And we just saw Cale Makar come in and score against his hometown team in the first game he's ever played in the NHL in the playoffs, and then just go on to win the Norris and the Stanley Cup. Not a big deal. So I totally see that, Ezra. And to your point, I think that it says a lot about Makar, because I feel like that expectation was put in place already by MacKinnon before Makar showed up. So if you look at this last like 10 years for the Avalanche, the expectation for rookies to make the steps at an escalated pace have probably been more so than ever, with the additions of MacKinnon and Makar, and really Rantanen was kind of the only one that got given the ample time to develop in the eyes of the fans too. Kind of Rantanen was always like, ah, well, he might be something one day, until he was absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that happens, I feel like, with European prospects, where there's a different pressure put on Canadian or North American, I should say, prospects to immediately step in and be something. And I think just because fans are like, who is this European guy? What is this name? I don't know. There's less of an expectation. It's a weird thing. I wish that wasn't how it was, but I feel like that's kind of something that happens. But
so many failures. It's like, this is the only way that somebody makes it on the team.
Right.
Is you just basically are on the team and then you stay. Like, nobody's really ever gone up and down and actually been a player. I mean, I guess maybe O'Connor sort of,
O'Connor for sure, and Rantanen too.
Rantanen went. Rantanen came up and never went back down, but he stayed down for a whole year.
Yeah.
Well, he played the first year when he was here. He played
nine, right?
Like, yeah, he played the nine games, and it was split between the very beginning and the very end. I think it was like 5-4 or something like that. And like,
yeah,
he didn't do anything. I remember they called
0 points, like, minus 7. Yeah.
Yeah. This the second time he was called up, he was centering Cody McLeod and Jack Skilly. And he did
what a combo. Thank
God, what a come so far. I
know. What a line that is.
Yeah. And he did nothing on it. And
he had nine shots in nine games.
I remember people that summer being like, and he was amazing in the AHL. But I remember there was a lot some talk over the summer, like, well, maybe he was just AHL good. Like, he didn't do anything. He didn't look good. So it's just, and then he played on that 48-point team, and he was the only one to score 20 goals on the entire team. And, you know, I mean, it was an okay rookie year, but it was like, you know, even at that point, he had showed, like, how good he is, and he wasn't going to go back to the AHL. Like, it was obvious that he was an NHL player at that point. So, like, he was even a guy that I wouldn't say, like, really went up and down, but... And so that's like all we see is like, if you're going to make it, you make it. Like, like, what are you doing? What are you showing? And I think there is also like Joe's PTSD, even though he was like an NHL player right away.
Yeah.
That's why. that's why we have. Yeah.
Joe's really needed to just be in a different environment because in Buffalo, he's like, he's one of their.
That's a good fit for him.
I was just looking at it. I'll pull it back up. I think he's. Seventh on the team in average time on ice, which is a perfect spot for him. He's a third line center. That's what he should do. He's playing. He's leading the team in expected goals for percentage among forwards. He's not generating a ton of offense, but he's playing his game, and it's good to see him succeeding in a place where his version of success is the expectation and not a disappointment. Yeah. But back to Newhook, I mean, I think he is doing what we're talking about, what Jackie was just describing of making it clear that he's an NHL player and he's not going back to the AHL. He's done that all year. There's no chance he ends up back in the AHL. We'll just, you know, we'll see if he is able to solidify a top six role next season. This season, obviously, I think that ship's left the bag. That ship's left the bag. Yeah, write that down.
That's but, the comedian, folks.
No, that's the guy who can't speak. But yeah, I mean, I think that he is going to be in the lineup. If he's a scratch, I'll be shocked when Helm comes back. But if he is, it'll be like last year's playoffs where he gets back in the lineup and sticks.
Yeah. Well, that pretty much is like all the topics I wanted to touch on today. But do you guys have any bold predictions for me? And before you, I'll give you some time to think about it. While I
have one other thing while we're thinking about it.
Let's do it.
I wanted to mention in relation to Newhook and Malgin, which is Malgin's getting his run on the second line right now. And if he sticks, great, cool. But if he doesn't, 100%. If he doesn't, I think Newhook is next in line to get a look up there.
We know. And just to double back, interestingly enough, when you say that Bednar said, let's give Newhook till the trade deadline, I think in the back of his mind, he knew it was going to be JT. And that's why it was a challenge and not an expectation. Because he was like, I'm going to basically set him up and let him believe that he's going to have a chance. I'm going to vocalize that so that he doesn't think there's anything in the background working against him. When in reality, I know who my 2C is, but if Newhook can make that jump, I know he has the potential to be a better 2C than JT will ever be. So maybe he can do that if I challenge him. And that hasn't happened, but that's okay. That's totally fine. And I agree with you, Ezra. Like, Malgin has done well so far, but...
I love that little assist on McKinnon's goal. It's
gorgeous, huh?
Oh, man.
That was good, yeah.
That's the thing it's that I like.
A little play that he can...
He has a lot of what I want to see in Newhook, which is like that show stopping where everybody just can't help. Like McCarr does this all the time, but like they sit still when the pass is about to come and they just kind of watch it happen. And that was kind of one of those plays for me where he froze the D and then when you freeze the D and Nathan McKinnon is on the ice, like good on you.
See you later.
It's going to work out. But yeah. Let me give a shout out.
You'll have a shout out, Petrangelo. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh,
well, you go ahead. I was just gonna say, right, you're gonna have another Alex Petrangelo moment. Oh boy.
Oh boy, yeah, exactly.
Oh boy. Yes.
That's what happens when you freeze the D and get the puck to Nathan
McKinnon. Yeah, you gotta add that one to the soundboard, by the way.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Perihelion, I believe that's how you say it. It says, hey guys, just saying hi on my way to bed almost midnight here in the Czech Republic. Look forward to listening to the pod tomorrow on my way on my walk from work. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much, man. That's awesome.
We love feedback, so yeah. It's very encouraging.
Yeah, that's really cool.
We're throwing this out there into the universe, and it's nice to know that it's reaching
people. Reaching eyes, and ears, exactly. All right, so it's bold prediction time. Ezra, let's go with you.
Okay. My bold prediction is that Newhook gets more ice time than Malgin in one game this week.
Bold. Very, very bold. Evan, your turn.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of who's in it. I like that Pittsburgh's coming into town this week because that's, it's Pittsburgh. It's always
the not a kid anymore. And
yeah.
And that'll he's be still neat. Dominating.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that wild?
So that'll be fun to see them there. So I'll center my bold prediction around that then. I'll say, actually, you know what? I take that back. I'll do this instead. Rantanen gets up to 50 goals this week.
This week.
I love that.
I think he might get two tonight against Chicago, and then Arizona's on Friday, and I could see him going 2-2, or maybe even 3-1 in between those two games. I could see that.
Pittsburgh for good measure.
Yeah. All right, Jackie, your turn.
Okay, I think I did this once before, and I gifted Newhook a goal by predicting that he would score. I'm going to say that he scores not one, but two goals this week.
Nice. I like it. Come
Come back next week when all three of us are right.
Yeah.
and whatever Adrian's is, by the way. I'm sorry. I cut that out.
No, I'm trying to think. I'm looking into history books to make sure I'm not about to put my foot in my mouth. But I'm pretty sure the most games that the Avs have ever won in consecutive fashion, there we go, is 12 games in a row, right?
I don't know. Sounds right. I think they went on a run of 9 last year.
My bold prediction is that they will be looking to tie that record on Wednesday against the Minnesota Wild.
Oh, so this is for next week.
Next Wednesday. Well, actually, that'll be 11. They'll have to tie against Dallas on Saturday, on April Fool's Day.
Oh, that would actually be a really good game to do it against. Imagine.
Well, here's my thinking. Blackhawks, meh. Penguins, meh. Yotes, maybe. They seem to give us a hard time for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm, but as always.
Ducks, meh. Wild, without Kaprizov, meh. Stars. I think there's a real good chance at it, guys. I'm just saying. If they might lose tonight just to shut me up.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better knock on wood right now.
No, you know what? I did this all year last year. I'm just hitting everybody with the confidence. I'm not knocking on nothing because we got a good Avalanche hockey team. And anytime you got a good team, you should expect them to play well. So that's my, I know 12 in a row is playing better than well.
Yeah. That's like expecting Alex Newhook to be 1C.
Yeah. they're going to get 6 tonight, hopefully. So knock on wood, final knock on wood, guys.
Yeah. I think they owe Chicago and they owe Anaheim. So
oh, absolutely.
Need to pick those up, but yeah, those Yotes games, those have been strange. So it's hard to know what to expect there. But why not?
Why the hell not? Yeah,
let's not get cold.
It's not called reasonable predictions. It's called bold predictions. Maybe
that's right.
Just leave Connor Ingram in the desert. Just please.
Yeah, Newhook will score enough to be second star of the week next week.
I love it. Look at us go. Tune in next week when we're all right. Well, I guess I won't be right yet next week. Hopefully.
What's your bold prediction?
You're on the path.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. For this week, I'll just do one for tonight. Tonight, I feel a hat trick. Just, I don't know who, but I think we're getting a hat trick tonight.
Bo Byram.
Yeah. That would be cool.
That would be awesome.
Three powerful goals.
That would be awesome.
Miko's had one so many times. Like, I know he's had a hat. I think he's had two this year. I know he had one in Finland. I think he had it. Does he have two this year? But he's been close so many times. So, yeah. I think I've been at three games where he had two goals. I'm like, come on. I want to see a hat trick. So.
That's where you buy a hat and bring a hat so that when you throw one, you still got one to wear out of the place because you know it's coming. So go buy a hat.
Those two.
Yeah. All right, you three. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm here with Jackie, Ezra, and Evan. My name's Adrian Hernandez. We are the Mile High Hockey Lab, courtesy of milehighhockey.com. Your place for everything Colorado Avalanche. If you enjoyed this broadcast, please don't forget to head on over to iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, all that stuff. We are there and ready to be streamed. And if you're listening and watching on YouTube, thank you. Like and subscribe and share. And hopefully the Avalanche beat the Blackhawks tonight, or else my bold prediction for the next 2 weeks look really stupid. And with that, you all have a wonderful evening, and go Avalanche.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.